is also in the kitchen, but Mrs. Sherborne has eyes for only the boy. Let's hope she'll have eyes for her husband, too. Did you know that Mrs. Sherborne and I were a love match? One would conclude this, sir. I hadn't concluded it, but I've heard it from the lady's own mouth, and a gentleman never argues with a lady.
Sherborne had heard a good deal of Charlotte's tirade, but rather than the words, the utter conviction in her tone had struck him. They hadn't been a love match, not by any stretch, but they were now. Epilogue. "Evander's English and his Latin are both progressing," Charlotte said. "His French is hopeless."
Sherborne plucked the letter from her hand.
"All boys have hopeless French, until they realize that the ladies speak it quite well. Are you recovered from your parents' leave-taking?"
Sherborne hadn't recovered from his in-law's holiday visit, but then one didn't recover from being married into the Wyndham family. One coped as best one could with good fortune of a magnitude that surpassed description. Charlotte's cousins and in-laws had responded en masse to her request for assistance where Brantford had been concerned, and the Earl and his Countess had taken an indefinite repairing lease in Portugal. Brantford had requested permission to write to his son, which petition Haverford, Radnor, and Charlotte were considering. Sherborne was considering the various queries and hypotheticals her cousins had also posed by letter. Did Sherborne think steam would render canals obsolete? Was steam a viable means of powering navigable craft? Had he an opinion on the commercial potential of indoor plumbing? Indoor plumbing, for God's sake? That question had been posed by the ever-practical Earl of Westhaven, and Sherborne had joined him in investing in copper piping. This flurry of correspondence was Charlotte's doing, for even before the whole business with Brantford had been resolved, she'd sung the praises of her husband's commercial genius, her word, to any Wyndham she'd been able to reach by post. Charlotte tugged her husband down beside her onto the sofa. She'd made a small chamber on the third floor, her personal parlour, claiming that she wanted to be able to see clear to the colliery when she couldn't be there in person. The view was lovely, and if the perspective was elevated, well, that didn't seem to bother her of late. "Mamma and Papa are a force of nature," she said, stroking the kitten in her lap. "But yes, I am recovered from their visit." The beast's name was Beowulf, and he'd been among Sherborne's holiday gifts to Charlotte.
"Your parents will be back," Sherborne said, for he was learning to read Charlotte's moods. "With not one, but two grandchildren on the way, we won't be able to keep them from a return visit."
And that was lovely. If half the cousins and sisters and in-laws who threatened to visit showed up, Sherborne Hall would need an entire wing of guest rooms, rather like a castle. The butler rapped on the door jamb. "Come in," Charlotte said. "I was about to order Mr. Sherborne a pot of peppermint tea. My parents' departure has left his nerves in a state."
"Another pot of tea, of course, madam, and His Grace of Haverford has come to call."
Haverford strolled in, his cheeks ruddy from the cold, his hair wind-blown.
"We announce family now. That will prove problematic when the shire is overrun with Wyndhams at next summer's house-party."
"Not another house-party," Sherborne groaned. "Scavenger hunts, kite-flying, piquet, and whist until I'm bilious."
"A house-party would be delightful," Charlotte said, rising and kissing the Duke on the cheek. "Have a seat, and stay for a cup of tea." Haverford sent Sherborne an unreadable look, but he sat beside Charlotte like a good duke.
"I come bearing news."
"Who's expecting now?" Sherborne asked.
"In a sense," Haverford replied, "you are."
He placed a folded sheet of vellum on the table before the sofa. Charlotte picked the paper up and smoothed it out. "This is—" She blinked rapidly. "Oh, Haverford, you didn't—"
Was that a happy you didn't, or an upset you didn't?
Charlotte threw her arms around the Duke and delivered a crushing hug, while the kitten scampered off with an indignant hiss. "Oh, you are awful, Haverford," Charlotte said. "You are the worst Duke ever, and I will name my firstborn after you."
"We're not naming our firstborn Dunderhead,"
Sherborne said, picking up the paper.
"This is merely a list of names."
Though reading the list sent an odd sensation shivering over Sherborne's skin.
"That is the New Year's Honours list,"
Haverford said.
"Congratulations, Sir Lucas."
Sherborne's gaze lit on his own name. He dropped the paper on the table and crossed the room to throw himself into the reading chair by the window.
"I have no need of a baronetcy. I don't want a baronetcy."
Sir Lucas Sherborne. His father and grandfather were probably dancing a jig in heaven, for a baronetcy was hereditary.
"I have no need of anything. My colliery is coming along. I have an assistant engineer who can jolly Mr. Jones without offending him, and keep track of all three pairs of his new spectacles. Not that Jones needs jollying now that he's remarried. I've sold my damned bank shares. My in-laws pronounced me a fine addition to the family. What need have I?"
Charlotte was regarding him, her eyes shimmering, her gaze enough to set Sherborne's heart thumping. To the casual observer, she was the same woman who'd shot top hats from Randy Batchelor's. To her husband, she had blossomed as autumn had turned to winter. Her figure was changing, of course, but she'd also gained a sense of true confidence where bravado and sheer courage had been before.
"Besides," Sherborne went on more softly, "I have my Charlotte. With Charlotte to love, what else in the whole world could I possibly need?"
She blew him a kiss. He pretended to catch it and touched his fingers to his lips.
"You're worse than Griffin and Biddy," Haverford groused. "Sherborne, think of your lady, whom I'm sure wouldn't mind having a lady's title, and don't blame me for this development. Elizabeth set the wheels in motion, and it is to her you will express sincere gratitude. Your library scheme found favour with the sovereign, who, like most worthy people, thoroughly enjoys a good book."
"The dratted libraries," Charlotte said, beaming at her husband. "You could still call me Mrs. Sherborne when we are private."
"I'm leaving," Haverford said, rising. "If I have to swill another cup of peppermint tea, I will go barking mad. Congratulations, Sir Lucas."
The Duke was making a good show of irascibility, but Sherborne knew friendship when he saw it. He shook Haverford's hand, slapped him on the back, and let him escape before the dreaded peppermint teapot made another appearance, which, in subsequent years, it did regularly. In later life, the baronet became a baron, and the coal mine which he eventually conveyed to Evander Porter was an example of the best, safest, most modern practices. Sherborne became hopelessly wealthy, in part because his lady wife was a fiend for calculations. Charlotte established a charitable undertaking of her own, one that found safe havens for young ladies in difficulties. She relied on a vast network of family and friends of means to ensure that every child brought to her attention was well cared for and well loved. And Sir Lucas considered it his greatest privilege to ensure that Charlotte was also well cared for and well loved. Very, very, very well loved indeed.
This has been a Hachette audio production of A Rogue of Her Own, The Wyndham Brides No. 4, written by Grace Burrows, read by James Langton. Produced by Elgin Productions, Inc. Post-production by Elgin Productions, Inc. Production supervised by Elise Green. A Rogue of Her Own is also available in print and digital formats from Forever, an imprint of Grand Central Publishing, a division of Hachette Book Group. For more Hachette Audio productions, visit us at hachetteaudio.com. Thank you for listening. Text copyright 2018 by Grace Burrows. Audio production copyright 2018 Hachette Audio, all rights reserved. Hachette Book Group supports the right to free expression and the value of copyright. The purpose of copyright is to encourage writers and artists to produce the creative works that enrich our culture. The duplicating, uploading, and distribution of this book without permission is a theft of the author's intellectual property. If you would like permission to use material from the book, other than for review purposes, please contact permissions@hbgusa.com. Thank you for your support of the author's rights. This audiobook is a work of fiction. Names, characters, places, and incidents are either the product of the author's imagination or are used fictitiously, and any resemblance to actual persons, living or dead, events or locales is entirely coincidental.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.